Angels 5. Your expected approach time 3-4, approach button 17. The altimeter 2-9-9-7.
Marshal Victor 211, sweep your signal.
Today's guest is no stranger to the camera or microphone. We know him best for asking the big questions, but today he'll be discussing them. Reflecting on recent reports and data, we discuss what the patterns of UAPs suggest, the new Cold War of uncovering the physics behind UAPs, and Australian cases of the Knowles family, Westall, and correlations between the Westall and aerial school visitations. This and much more as we speak to Ryan Sprague. I am Brett Moffat, and you are listening to the UFOs of Oz podcast. For many of us, Ryan Sprague needs no introduction. For UFO Twitter, fans of his very popular Somewhere in the Skies podcast and Mysteries Decoded on the CW network, Ryan is no stranger. It's a pleasure and a privilege to have you on the UFOs of Oz podcast, Ryan. And for those in the audience who aren't familiar with you, and I'm sure a lot of people are very familiar with you already, but can you just tell us about what you do and what really got you interested in the UFO phenomenon?
Absolutely, Brett. Well, first and foremost, thank you for having me as your second guest. That's a tough act to follow, man, with that premiere episode. So thank you.
No, it's my pleasure. Thank you so much.
Of course. So yeah, my interest in the whole UAP UFO phenomenon really started very early on in my life. I was a teenager and I had a UFO sighting, and that was kind of it for me, man. I mean, if you want, I can go into detail of the sighting. I've done it a million times, so I'm used to it. But for any of your listeners who may not know my origin, I saw a triangular UFO, or what I perceived to be a triangular UFO, with my father in 1995 in New York State.
Yeah,
and it floated over a body of water, disappeared, and in those few minutes, it basically changed my life.
Yeah.
I went on a journey to try to figure out what I saw, what I experienced. Mm. And that was it, man. I went off running. I did my first UFO interview with a witness at age 13 with a Vietnam veteran of all people.
Yeah.
And who had a Foo Fighters sighting, not of the band, but of the actual UFOs.
Yeah.
And I was honored that he came to me with this story for the first time ever in his life. He came to me, a 13-year-old kid, and that's when I knew that that's what I wanted to do in the UFO field. I wanted to talk to people and hear their stories. You know, while I think times and dates and descriptions of craft are very important, data is extremely important. For me, it always came down to the person who had the experience and had the sighting, because I've been in their shoes. I've looked up and saw something I couldn't explain, and it ultimately changed my life. So that's kind of my origin story.
Oh no, and that's a pretty incredible story. Was with the craft that you saw, based on the other, like a lot of other testimonies we hear about the triangular craft, was it moving fairly slowly and silently, or was there any was there any noise or anything?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it was completely silent to my knowledge. It was pretty high up, so maybe there was some sort of noise coming from this thing, but not that I could hear personally.
Yeah.
I also was listening to Green Day on my headphones at the time. And dude, I blast my music. I'm like deaf now because of it. So thanks, 13-year-old Ryan. But I could not hear any noise coming from it. I flipped my headphones off, and all I could hear was the water hitting the dock outside of this motel that I was staying at.
Yeah.
And all I could hear that, and I could hear my dad inside watching a Yankees baseball game.
Yeah.
And I had those two sounds going on while this triangle was above me, man.
Yeah.
And it was just like the weirdest, most surreal, bizarre experience ever, but
absolutely
completely silent and super slow.
It
was just, at first it was just hovering, and then it started to slowly move over the water.
Yeah.
So, you know, I thought maybe it could have been a blimp or something like that, but it was huge. Yeah. Like, just, I can't even describe how big it was, this triangular formation. Absolutely. And then my father actually came out and saw it with me. So I knew I wasn't making it up. I knew it wasn't like, you know, a plane that I was mistaken for something, because he was just standing there with me dumbfounded.
Wow. And,
you look to your parent to explain something and they can't.
I know. That's really special too, actually, to have had the experience with your dad. They're probably,
I was very lucky.
Yeah, absolutely. Because that's something very special that you guys, you know, will have to talk about for the rest of your lives. Remember?
Oh, and we do over plenty of beers, man. Yeah. Every time I meet up with him, it comes up in casual conversation because of what I do. I mean, UFOs are, God, 85% of my life, probably.
Yeah.
So anytime I go home and, you know, catch up with the folks, it inevitably comes up some way, somehow. And he's a believer now, man, with everything that's going on in the world today with UFOs and these conversations we've had throughout the years. He has no doubt that what we saw was not a simple airplane or blimp. It could have been some highly advanced aircraft, or it was something from somewhere else. That's absolutely, as far as I could say.
Absolutely. And that's actually, it's a really interesting point you make, because I find one of the things that I kind of, sometimes when I reflect on the UFO phenomenon, I think of it's such a paradigm shift to consider it, isn't it? And even, I suppose, when I see discussion threads and whatnot on UFO Twitter, we often make the assumption that whatever these things are, or whoever they are, think the same way that we do. And it may not be as binary as that. You know, they may not think in terms of good, bad, you know, like it's very hard to make any assumptions at all, isn't it? Because we just have no idea. We know that they exist.
Absolutely. And I mean, you bring it up to current day in terms of the U.S. government's, I guess, sort of not conclusions, but, you know, admission that they are admitting UFOs exist. And it's taken them a very long time to just do that. But what you're saying is now we have to ask the harder questions. You know, what are they? Where do they come from? And I think, like you said, most importantly, what are their intentions? We have no idea why these UFOs are here, what they're doing, where they come from, but we know they're here. Mm. And that's a big step, I think, in humanity today to finally, I don't want to say everyone, because obviously not everyone accepts that just yet, particularly the mainstream scientific community, which I'm sure we'll talk about as well, but acknowledgement. I think this is a paradigm shift, not only for an individual having the experience, but for us in the world right now of being like, wow, like UFOs are something that I actually have to think about now.
That's right.
You know, my health, paying my bills, what I'm doing next week. I also have to now think UFOs are real. And that's huge. And that's exciting for us in the UFO community who have, you know, shouted it from the rooftops for decades now that these things are real, and we should probably look more into that. So
absolutely, because I think you know, I would like to think maybe one day in the future, and this is really shooting the breeze, or in terms of you know, we talk about the way that the community works on our planet in terms of trade agreements and tussles over pieces of the ocean or whatever, and it's like, you know, that's on your side and this is on my side. And when you think about another civilization on a potentially another planet, or where, again, that even that's an assumption, we're not sure, but if, you know, it's just like, it's really hard to wrap your mind around, isn't it? It's actually potentially very abstract, because
it's abstract, and it's ultimately very messy if you think about it. I mean, you're right. I don't think these UAP or UFOs, please excuse the drama dog outside of my building also. He likes to be a part of the conversations every now and again.
That's right.
It is very abstract, and I don't think these UFOs necessarily care about who our world leaders are, the sovereignty of our different nations. These are not things that I believe they would care about or seem to be displaying in where they're showing up in training ranges here in the United States, over military installations in Australia, over nuclear installations in Japan. It's very clear that whatever rules or restrictions we have here on our planet, they're not playing by those rules, Brett. And that's a little scary. And it's it leaves many questions to be asked, for sure.
Absolutely. No, that's such a good point, because those rules that we have in place, the rules that the military have in place, that's a rabbit's hole. Like, it's a rabbit's hole. When I think of what happened to Commander Fravor with the Tic Tac and the fact that it knew the cap point, the mind sort of boggles. You think they obviously understand us to some extent, you know what I mean? So again, it's like how much do they may understand us way more than we actually think they do, right? Know, perhaps they're the ones actually writing this narrative, not us.
That's such a good point. I'm so happy you said that. I do believe, and I've said this in many interviews, that I do not believe in this grand disclosure of any kind by, you know, flying saucer on the White House lawn or the United Nations coming together and saying UFOs are real, aliens are real. It's never going to happen, man. I just personally don't see that happening. No. I do believe we are on the timetable of these phenomena, and when they're ready to truly present themselves or them, I can't even say themselves, because I don't even know if it is a sentient thing happening. I do believe we are on the phenomena's timetable.
I don't want to be sort of overly dramatic and say a cover up, but do you feel like the government is really still trying to run this narrative and really drag this out for as long as it possibly can?
I see two things happening, right? And I think it's not as dark syndicate as maybe someone like Stephen Greer would say. I believe there are factions within government in every country who have a vested interest in this topic of UFOs and UAP, not so much just from a national security standpoint, but you got to think, government is made up of thousands and thousands of individuals with their own personal belief systems, their own motivations for why they do what they do. So to me, when I hear these things of like a secret group within the Pentagon, or go back to the X-Files days of the literal syndicate of a shadow government, I really think the answer is somewhere in between. I think there are groups of people who, when they have that power within whatever governmental agency they are a part of or intelligence agency, maybe they, you know, something like maybe what Jacques Vallée would say, like an invisible college of sorts, where after work they meet up at a bar and they say, hey, yo, what's the NSA saying over there? And what's the CIA saying? And, the Department of Defense. And maybe they do look into these things a lot more than other people. So for me, I don't think there's some grand cover up within the government. I've never really believe that. I believe things have been covered up because they do not have answers to what occurred. You take Roswell, for instance, probably one of the most famous incidents. And even then, I don't think that the United States Army Air Force at the time, they weren't even the Air Force yet. They were still so young. Of course, it would happen. A UFO crash would happen before that. I don't think they truly knew what they were dealing with. No. And what's the best way to sort of cover it up? Say it was this, and then we'll figure it out. You know, very retrospect look at it.
Yeah.
And for me, man, all these things that Elizondo and Sheehan and Greer and individuals are saying now, there is probably some truth to that. And I do trust what Ross has to say on this topic. He is one of the most tenacious investigative journalists out there, willing to cover the UFO topic right now, and to challenge the US government when our mainstream media here in the country will not do that. So again, kudos to him for doing that. So if he is saying that he has talked to individuals who have said these things, there probably is some truth to it, but I don't think they have the answers. I don't think the Pentagon knows what these UAP are. They figured out one case out of 144 that they looked at. So that right there, man, to me screams, we don't know what we're dealing with. We don't have the resources to understand what we're dealing with. And we need to continue looking into it. And you could say that that's a way to continue the narrative that they are. Yeah. You know, we'll keep looking into it, public, and we're going to put a staff on this, and we're going to get, you know, implement artificial intelligence and try to understand what these UAP are. And we'll let you know. I don't see it that way. I think this is a way to keep, like you said, keep kind of the same thing going of, we don't know, but we'll figure it out eventually. That's kind of what I'm seeing happening.
Also, too, the other thing that probably comes to my mind is that this is like a space race, isn't it, really, with I think of Russia and China. I feel like there is this race to sort of, I guess, crack the code. Who can understand this technology and exploit it first?
I'm so happy you brought that up. I didn't mean to interrupt, but I have read this report, Brett, the 9 pages or what is it, 7 pages? It's got a cover page and an appendix. Every word in there, man, was like looked over before this thing went out. Yeah. And to me, this screams Cold War. It's a new Cold War of technology. And it's not a race so much to like completely crack the UFO code, but I think this is like, you can use this to your advantage.
Yeah.
Here in the United States, we're saying it's not top secret United States technology. It can't be Russia. It can't be China. They're so barbaric compared to the United States in terms of technology. So that's out of the picture. I don't believe that for a second. When it comes to highly advanced United States technology, I do believe that a lot of these UAP probably are something like that. And to say to other countries, no, it's not ours. It's not ours. Those other countries are not stupid. They know that a lot of it is ours. And it's kind of a way to show them like, and again, it's a way to show these other countries who are adversaries to the United States or, you know, even Europe, that that's out there. We know it's not yours, but we're going to say it's not ours, but you know, deep down it is ours. So calm down. So I do think you're right. I think this is a race to understand not so much the UFO, what is behind the UFOs, but more of a race of technology.
Yeah.
Again, like you said, China is now going to do their own UFO task force and use artificial intelligence. And you know, Russia won't be far behind when it comes to that.
Yeah.
And I do think this topic of UFOs is a very clear way of doing that, of kind of spreading that out to the public of these things are happening. We don't know what it is, but we're going to keep it in the shadows, I guess.
Yeah. To the average person on the street, like, what are the implications for this? Because the kind of the feedback I get from people is, well, you know, it's, you know, I've still got to go to work on Monday. It's not changing my life anytime soon. It's like, and I think too, in a lot of people's minds, it's like, these are little green men in spaceships from another planet. So I guess the kind of the narrative, for want of a better word, it really hasn't been explored in great depth in terms of what this could actually mean. Can we talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely. I think, you know, one of the first things that I make very clear when I'm interviewed for articles or, you know, different media outlets is always the question. So UFOs, they're real. So aliens are visiting our planet. And that's the first question every time. And it's the first question where I have to be like, no, stop. You know, it's like hitting the dog away. Stop connecting the little green men to these UAP. We don't know that. nobody truly knows that. Maybe. Yeah. I can't say for certain that nobody knows it, but for humanity overall, there has been this intrinsically linked thing between aliens and UFOs since, you know, basically recorded history of this topic. If you want to look at it from the modern UFO era, like you mentioned earlier, sort of the 1950s and early or late 1940s is when this really started to amp up. And right from there, it was this connector between aliens and the UFO. And I always try to keep them separate in the work I do. You know, I am a ufologist. I love studying UFOs. That doesn't mean I don't look at close encounter cases or quote unquote alien abductions, but I never am one to rush to judgment of, oh, someone saw this and, you know, they had missing time. I don't automatically say, oh, they were abducted by, you know, a being from another planet. Like, there's just no definitive or scientific proof of that.
Yeah.
So I think you're right. I think where we are right now is we had the United States government admit that UFOs are real. But how is the overall perception of that going to come across? Oh, they're saying aliens exist. So of course you're going to get Neil deGrasse Tyson on television. You're going to get, you know, nuclear physicists and people saying, this isn't possible. Aliens could not have traveled to our planet. Like, let's not put the cart ahead of the horse here. And to me, that's not what we should be asking. When you have a UFO report come out, you should not be having a scientist come on and explaining to us the possibility of intelligent life elsewhere in the universe, because we're not talking about the same thing. You have to start somewhere and then work your way up to that. And I don't think we're there overall yet. I don't think the United States government is. I don't think we have, as humanity, are ready to really go there. And again, they're UAP, they're phenomena. It could be a million different things. Why does it have to be little green men?
Yeah.
And that's kind of where I am with that, Brett. I don't think people are quite ready to really go there of these are aliens visiting our planet. And look, the media, it just went nuts to the countdown when this report was coming out. Cause I think a lot of people who don't think about this topic were like, whoa, is the Pentagon going to say aliens exist? And all of us in the UFO community were like, no, no, that's not what they're going to say. Like, trust me, that's not what they're going to say.
Yeah.
It's going to a lot more mundane than that.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people were let down. And that's, like you said, that's why the media kind of fizzled out with this. It's because the excitement was the buildup to it all. And, you know, every outlet covered it. But now it's like, now what? Now what?
Yeah. 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 Because I think, like, for me personally, I think the implications on just what we do know, the very little we do know, is extremely compelling. Do you feel like the actual narrative is so complex that it's hard to tell in a simple way? The media is so used to communicating with I guess the broader community in such a sort of a narrow way that this is almost a bit beyond the way they're used to talking to us. They can't tell this story in 500 words, you know, or less, kind of thing.
Yes.
You know, it's just got too many tentacles, I guess.
Absolutely. The mainstream media is not ready to cover this topic in the way I personally think it deserves. And that is why you have independent journalists going there.
Yeah.
And you know, I take, for example, The Debrief, a website that I work for. I'm a little biased, but willing to cover these topics, but also to very strict journalistic standards.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're not out there saying that, you know, again, that aliens are visiting our planet. We're saying, hey, these intelligence officials came to us and said, this is what they know. And this is what they've looked at. So I think you're right. I don't think that we're any closer to answers than we were before this report came out. And I also don't think that that any government is really ready to answer those questions.
No.
I guess the way I could sum it up very easily. I, as a ufologist, don't think I'm ever going to know the true answer to the UFO question. And yeah. I'm completely fine with that.
Yeah.
I think, you know, the reward comes in the journey and the people I meet along the way and some of the answers I might get. Because, hey, man, like, we might figure out one UFO, but we're not going to figure out all of them.
Yeah. So,
yeah. There you go. I think the topic is that sort of octopus that you mentioned. And that if you're looking to CNN or 60 Minutes to give you the answers, it's simply not going to happen.
Yeah.
But I do applaud the journalists within those mainstream outlets who have tried. Several here in the United States, on NBC and I do think the 60 Minutes segment was incredible. And also the Seven News Spotlight documentary in Australia.
Yeah.
It was, those are what give me hope.
Yeah.
That mainstream journalists, they get it and they know something's going on and they're working within the structure of the mainstream outlet they're working for. But look, Ross may have gone on you know, Seven News Spotlight to do that, but he's also going on all of these UFO podcasts and talking to, you know, alternative outlets about it because he knows that's where the true research is happening.
Yeah.
And even the government has admitted, dude, that they come to us for answers, which astounded me.
Absolutely.
I asked Elizondo that. I'm like... Are there, like, I see all these weird Twitter accounts showing up out of nowhere. Like, I know I didn't just gain 300 followers, you know, because they liked what my last podcast episode. What's going on there?
And he said, absolutely.
Those are government people, and they're coming to you guys to figure out what this UFO thing is because they have no idea. What's going on?
Yeah. Well, there's a lot, you know, absolutely. And that's what's amazing about UFO Twitter is there's a lot of dots being connected there. And that's what's so good about what the debrief does is it's very much committed to this conversation as it unfolds, as well as all the other things on the periphery, which are kind of are happening all over the place in terms of science and developments in terms of science and things.
Well, Brett, let me just add to kind of put a pin on your question. You said science, and I think that is the key to all of this. I think the next step when it comes to the government looking at this topic is inviting the scientific community to come in, ridicule aside, and look into the UFO topic. Look at these videos and try to understand the physics happening in them and try to reverse engineer what we're seeing in terms of, wow, we may have discovered a new law of science here
and
how this UFO is displaying itself and the things that it's doing.
Yeah.
And talk to the pilots.
Yeah. Like,
talk to the people who experience these things instead of going on TV and saying they saw, you know, a crack in their
car. Oh, I know. Or they saw Venus or something.
Venus.
I know. It gets ridiculous, doesn't it? Yeah. In some of those cases, particularly with all the discussion that's happened around the Tic Tac incident, it's just, it's kind
11.
Of.
Brett, there were 11 near misses with UFOs in this UAP report.
Yeah.
Like, that's not a misidentification. That is a solid object being picked up on radar, being picked up on camera, being picked up by satellite, brushing past an aircraft. So you're right, man. Again, I think the next step is the scientists. They are going to be, I think, the harbingers of truth when it comes to this topic.
Yeah.
And they be a part of the discussion, and we need to get them involved with the government. Again, we were talking about a few people in a basement who were doing this Pentagon report on the side.
Yeah. You
know, after their 9-hour day at work and a couple beers, a glass of wine, and then they're like, oh, I gotta do this stupid UFO thing now. Like, let's put some honest to God science to this thing and figure it out. And there's incredible scientists out there who are willing to do that. So I have hope. Where does the discussion go without the scientific community and also the data from outside of the government?
Yeah.
You know, again, this report was strictly military UFO encounters.
Yeah.
And for every one of those, man, there's thousands of people around the world who have seen these things as well.
Absolutely. So like,
invite that to be a part of the data. Otherwise, what's the point of looking at 144 cases? That's not going to determine what UFOs are, strictly because they were military observers. Yeah, they're trained observers, and there is a high level of credibility to that. Yep. But so is the, you know, the law enforcement officer who saw you. So is your barista at the coffee shop. Like, I don't care who these people are or their level of, you know, intelligence. They saw something they could not explain.
Absolutely.
And whether it was a identification or not, or they made it up, whatever. Let's wade through that eventually, but at least let it be a part of the data. And that's not what the United States government is doing right now. So I think they're kind of, you know, they're really shooting themselves in the foot when it comes to only looking at military stuff, in my personal opinion.
There's so many compelling cases out there that I don't think have come to light, that I've sort of come across. Like, I know we've got some amazing researchers who've done a ton of work on many cases, but there was one I was going to just discuss with you, the Knowles, which is very close to home, the Knowles family case. Would you like to tell us, have you
Sure. Yeah, man, I could, this is a case that I've come across in the past, probably 2 years or so ago. So it's fairly new to me as well. And again, that's because I think a lot of us here in the United States, we look at Roswell, we look at, you know, all these cases that happen here, and we tend to not look elsewhere. So I think it's really important that all these other cases get covered. And, for me, the Knowles incident was one of the big ones. And if you don't mind, I actually have my notes here, so I might refer to them a little
Absolutely. Bit. Absolutely. No. I've got some notes we can cross-check out. I've got some notes as well. So I know. And I have looked into that case a little bit, so it'd be really interesting to have a chat about it.
Okay, cool. Yeah, and please stop me if I'm incorrect on anything. But this was January of 1988. Yeah. The Knowles family were driving from, I believe it was from Perth to Melbourne. It was Faye, the mother, Patrick, Wayne, and Sean, her sons, and their two dogs. And it was about 1 a.m. and they're driving down this desolate road, and the radio starts going nuts. Very Close Encounters of the Third Kind-esque.
Yeah.
And Sean, I believe, was driving at the time. He was the only one awake. Everyone else was asleep in the car. Again, it was like around 1 a.m. And he notices a light off in the distance coming at him and fairly quickly. And he's a little, you know, on edge. It's like veering into the lanes and whatnot.
Yeah.
So he wakes everyone up in the car and he's like, hey, guys, brace for impact, possibly something's about to happen. And you know, the light's coming at him, and then it starts lifting off of the road. So it clearly wasn't a vehicle. And this light went over their car, and they start freaking out. And they pulled over at one point, and the light disappeared out of sight. And then Sean gets back on the road. He's like, okay, everything's all right. And as they're driving back home towards Perth, they notice that the light is now behind them and coming at them very quickly.
Yeah.
And this is where the story, Brett, just kind of went off the rails. The light goes above their car, and they feel a thud on top of the car, like something landed on the roof, and it actually dents the roof of the car.
Yeah.
So mind you, the car is still moving at this time. So they're freaking out. Sean's trying to stay consistent on the road.
Yeah.
The dogs are going nuts.
Yeah.
And that's when they felt the car literally lift off of the road.
Yeah.
They were being elevated by whatever was above them.
Yeah.
So naturally, this is the point where I think they all were like, something truly extraordinary is happening. And Faye, being the, you know, the mother, the protector, she actually rolls down the window and puts her hand out and can feel this UFO, this craft above her, and is trying to like dislodge it from their car.
Yeah.
She said that her hand, it got burnt and it was very hot.
Yeah.
And she had like a very strange black dust or powder all over.
Yeah.
Okay. So at this point, they're freaking out. The car, the speedometer on the car is something like over 100 kilometers per hour.
Yeah, like. I think it was 200 kilometers per hour.
So, you know, can you imagine the tires going that quick and then getting back on the road? What could happen? But that's inevitably what happened.
Yeah.
The car starts to lower. It feels like they're dislodged from this thing. And they're back on the road and they hit with such force, the impact, that I believe one or two of their tires like burned out.
Yeah.
And that's when Sean's like, all right, well, this is done. They pull the car over as best they can. They all run out of the car, hide behind a bunch of bushes.
Yeah.
And that's when they actually saw presumably the craft that had done this. And they said it was very big. It was illuminated. It was shaped like an egg in a cup, I believe Sean said.
Yeah.
And eventually disappeared out of sight.
Yeah.
And this is when a few trucks pulled over and helped them get to a service road station and get their car fixed up. And then that's when they reported it to the police. And there was an investigation. I believe a local group in Australia came and investigated this from Victoria, I believe it was. And they got some of this black powder that was on the car that was on Faye. And they had it tested, and there were extreme signs of radiation within this dust in the, in these elements. And that was kind of it, man. The story went viral in Australia, as viral as it could back then, and started picking up steam across the world. And the Knowles family became semi-famous for a little while, but I don't think in the way they truly wanted. They wanted to get their story out there of what happened, and it was immediately ridiculed. And everyone made fun of them and said they were, you know, it was mass hysteria. And this family, or they made it all up. It was all a hoax. And it did not end very well for them. They were sort of laughed out of, you know, their town there in Perth. And I felt so bad hearing how this thing ended for, you know, and that, you know, that's the price you pay for coming forward with such an extraordinary family. But when you look at them in interviews, they were clearly affected by whatever this event was.
So, absolutely.
And in this case is not talked about enough, in my personal opinion. So I thought it was definitely worth bringing up in your neck of the woods.
I recall seeing them in an interview. They had an interview fairly shortly afterwards, and they were still clearly quite shocked and affected by it. But absolutely, yeah, that the stigma which continues to this day, you know, it yeah, obviously back then it was, I think it was even worse. I think what's really interesting about this case, and it's a phenomena that's known here. I'm not sure if it's really known overseas, but have you ever heard of Min-Min or Min-Min lights before?
Yes, I do believe I've come across the term, but please elaborate because...
No, my pleasure. But the Min-Min lights, it's very much you know, to the phenomena that we just spoke about with the Knowles case, which is lights that tend to approach vehicles, you know, usually on lonely highway roads, usually in the outback. They basically go back to the Aboriginal dream time. So, you know, a scientist, I think, from Queensland University did some study and sort of on the Min-Min lights. To my knowledge, he really was only able to sort of partially explain them from a scientific point of view. And interestingly, I don't think his explanation covers all of the so-called Min-Min light occurrences. He sort of describes a kind of climatic aberration, I guess, where cold air meets hot air and it creates this glow on the horizon, and that can potentially be seen from a long distance away. But there are many other instances of reports where it's not just in the distance that literally these things sit behind cars or right. semi-trailers and whatnot. So I think it affects
the vehicle.
Presumably. Absolutely.
I mean,
yeah, definitely.
That really caught my attention too. And
I'll just refer to Joe Rogan's podcast, which was, I think, number 1574. Jacques Vallée spoke about the patterns. What do the patterns tell us? Do you think that there's, yeah, can you talk about, you know, this interest in nuclear energy and even like this, like I'm not sure if we can extrapolate anything or make any kind of correlation between where, you know, where a lot of sightings have happened, but can, you know, can we talk a little bit about what the patterns could suggest?
Yeah, absolutely. So and you did bring this up earlier that a lot of this seemed to really explode in the 50s, and you look at, this is the age of the atomic age. This was the literal atomic age. And you did see a huge influx of UFO reports coming in around when the United States detonated the first atomic bomb. And a lot of people sort of, you know, zoom out and think, oh, that was a beacon to whatever was out there of what this tiny planet over here could do and the capabilities they now possessed or harnessed, I guess. And that's just as good as an observation as any, I think. And I do believe that there is a extreme interest in our nuclear capabilities by these UAP, UFOs. You know, I came across a case just the other day that happened this year in Japan, where UFOs were sighted over a nuclear reactor. Right here in New York, where I live, there was a case back in the 80s where a huge dome-shaped UFO was reported over another nuclear reactor. And this was seen by every guard at the time that was at this installation. And then you go to the more famous ones where they have possibly turned on or turned off nuclear missiles, which is terrifying. And we have dozens and dozens of cases, and we have testimony from people who worked at these installations willing to come forward and say, yeah, yep, flipped them on. I wasn't able to get them off. I can't tell you what it was, but there was something above the installation at that time.
Yeah.
So I do believe that there is a strong pattern and connection when it comes to UFOs and our nuclear capabilities. And you, again, you look at something even like the Navy UFO sightings that have occurred here in the United States that have been made famous now by the New York Times. A lot of these carriers are powered by nuclear energy. So there you go. You don't even need nuclear weapons on these things. It's just the nuclear energy powering these huge vessels.
Yeah.
And is it a way to either... some believe maybe even this is a way to attract UFOs, that this is the way the military is trying to almost go fishing, put that nuclear bait out there and see what these UAP do. So I do believe this is a huge piece of the puzzle, Brett. I honestly do. And again, it's not just here in the United States. This is happening at nuclear installations all over the world.
Yeah. And I guess you could argue that these are just, sort of random events, but they don't appear to be random events. Like, definitely when I think of like the parallels between the Ariel case and the Westall case, they were clearly multiple UAPs. In Ariel, one actually landed and the children apparently got very close to a being. In Westall, had Westall, I really get a strong feeling that if Westall was to play out and the UAP didn't take off and fly away, because apparently I'm not sure how many of the children got close to that particular UFO. I know one girl got close enough to actually feel the heat, and it was I almost get the feeling if that was to play out, that potentially that may have been the objective. And I know that's a grand assumption, but it was just interesting that the UAP decided to approach a school, and land right next to a school where there's school children. So it kind of, I guess what these instances suggest to me is that what's ever behind the UAP actually understand us a lot more than what we think, potentially. They understand what nuclear energy is. That's obviously of great interest to them. But also, too, you know, to land at a school. And I could even, you know, use the Fravor event where they knew where the cap point was going to be. So there's, you know, there's obviously an intelligence behind this, isn't there, that apparently understands us. If this technology is hundreds, if not thousands of years more advanced than us, then, you know, just thinking outside of the nuts and bolts of what these things are and what they can do, when you think of that more broadly in terms of what the possibilities are in terms of technology, I suppose, for want of a better word, yeah, that they may know exactly, you know, on a very, very deep level, much more about this planet and much more about us than what we do. We know ourselves.
Or, Brett, they are us. I always love going there because I feel it's a lot more possible than a lot of the other explanations. Again, like, clearly I'm no quantum physicist or I haven't taken time travel 101 advanced courses or anything like that. But I mean, I think you're right. There is an intelligence behind a lot of this that seems to be either precognitive or so far advanced that, yes, they are able to read our emotions or our thoughts. And I love that you brought up these two school cases because I think there's a reason for that. I do believe that these two events are somehow connected. It might not have been the same intelligence behind them. You know, there was what, a gap of something like 30 years between them. Maybe Westall was, like you said, the failed attempt of a close encounter. They didn't quite get there. And then they came back in 94 to Zimbabwe and it finally did it, but who knows, man. But I think the important thing here is that they presented themselves to children. And I think, again, I think that is something that we don't look at a lot because we tend to believe that children are, you know, making stuff up all the time or mistaking things. And for me, I actually really value testimony from children because I believe they will not filter themselves as an adult would when they see something like this. Yeah. An adult would try to find every conventional explanation before saying, I just saw an alien craft land and a little dude running around the disc part of the craft and then get up and leave. Like, who's gonna believe that? Yeah. So when these 200 or so kids in Westall said that they saw this, or what, the 60 kids in Zimbabwe said they see that, I tend to believe them more than I would an adult saying it because they aren't filtering themselves. Absolutely. They aren't afraid to say something. Yeah, I live here in New York and, you know, there's little kids on the subway platforms who might see, you know, some unfortunate homeless person peeing in a corner and saying, Mom, look at that person peeing, you know, whereas an adult would look away and just, like, you know, not be a part of the situation.
Yeah.
So again, I think children are extremely honest and they don't care what people think about what they're saying. Mm. And I firmly believe those events happened. I spoke personally to one of the primary witnesses of the Zimbabwe case, Selma Sadiq, and that event changed her life in many positive ways. And for some of the children, not so positive ways. So then you wonder, do these events happen and they want to see how it plays out in the observer's life? Mm. I love thinking about those things, the aftermath of an event. That's what I do in the UFO field, is I focus on what happened after the event, how it changed an individual.
Yeah.
So I go back to these children cases and be like, they were meant to be a part of this. This wasn't happenstance. They wanted the children to experience this and see how it ultimately affected them 20, 30, 40 years down the line. Again, that might be going really out there, but hey, again, it's just a theory that I think might might lend us some answers eventually. I don't know.
Absolutely. And no, I don't think it is. I think it's really important to have those, you know, to have that conversation, because it's the data, which, you know, for that particular case, like the Zimbabwe case, the data really is in the eyewitness testimony and what those children felt like, that they all reported this sense of calm, but also a sense of that the alien, I'll just use the word alien, but was communicating, you know, got to get rid of technology, it's not good, you know, need to look after the planet, like that they all reported a very, very similar feeling. And then they said it just disappeared. Those feelings just disappeared. And obviously, the UAP left, the being left, the UAP left. But yeah, like it's you know, that was unanimous. I think in terms of the ones who got close to that being, they all reported very similar feelings. So
there's an idea of gifting, Brett, I think, that we can look at too. There are people out there who believe the Roswell UFO crash was a gift to humanity, the technology, that maybe there weren't beings in there, or maybe there were, and they sacrificed themselves for the furtherance of science here on this other planet. Be like, here's this. Let's see what you do with it. Maybe again, these children who reported that they saw images of the world being destroyed, and you have all these contactees back in the 60s saying the same thing, like, stop the nuclear arms race. This is what the aliens told me. Like, yeah, I'm sure a lot of them were making it up or were delusional, but maybe there are some who actually experienced that. And look, that message has been linear throughout the beginning of the whole contactee movement up until today. Stop destroying the planet. Technology can be used for good, but it can also be used for very bad things. So what did happen with that Roswell craft? Has it been implemented into the world in a good way, if it was alien and so far advanced, or has it been used, like always, to militarize technology? Obviously we can't answer those questions, but yeah, maybe it is these intelligence gifting us with knowledge or messages, or even technology, to see what we do with it. And clearly our planet is still suffering in many different ways. So we're clearly not using it to the potential I think we could, but maybe we will. I can't tell you, but I do think child encounters are a lot more important than we give them credit for.
Yeah, absolutely. No, and thank you so much. Thank you so much for discussing that. So what is happening in your world at the moment? What is what are you working on right now that you're happy to discuss with us and the listeners?
Absolutely. Always something, man. I never stop. I do the weekly podcast Somewhere in the Skies every Monday. And I'm coming out with a really fun episode this week where we discuss the origins of Tom DeLonge's company and the enigmatic general in the Air Force that may have put all of this that we're talking about into play. So that was a fun discussion. I'm talking to Ross very soon. He's coming on the show to talk all about his doc in Australia and his upcoming book coming out. But other than that, I have a new season of Mysteries Decoded premiering very soon here in the United States, where I went out and investigated some pretty well-known UFO cases and found some awesome new evidence for them. So hopefully you guys can get it over there too. If not, let me know.
Absolutely. I did. I actually went looking for, I couldn't, I think there could be some stuff on YouTube, but it's not readily easily available actually.
It never is. We didn't get Ross's doc here in the United States, so I unfortunately had to go through the back channels for that. I'll have to apologize to him, but
I think he'd be very happy to you know, that the more people that could get to see that,
That's what's important,
the better. But I think it may be becoming available soon, but it wasn't probably not soon enough, but and you're working on a book as well. I know you're working on a new book.
Yes. Yeah. I thank you for bringing that up. I always forget to mention that. Yeah. So my most recent book came out last year. It was the second edition of my book, and it was 80,000 new words. So it was basically a brand new book. But again, I'm all about the aftermath of UFO events. So I always want to continue the story. These things don't just happen and then it's over.
Yeah.
They have lasting impacts on people.
Yeah.
So I'm working on a new book right now where I do revisit some of the stuff I've done in the past, but I'm going to be focusing on individuals who find themselves in my shoes, in your shoes. They are a part of the UFO research community or the paranormal community or anything unexplained, and trying to understand what ignited, I think, the flame in these people to want to dedicate their lives to uncovering these mysteries and the many profound experiences they've had along the way. So it's probably the most in-depth and most intimate thing I've ever written. I'm meeting with each of these people and really going deep into their lives.
Yeah.
Whether it's through their belief systems or, you know, just everything you could possibly think of and how it connects to what they're doing today in these weird worlds we find ourselves in, Brett. So I'm excited. I can't say when it's going to come out, but I'm working on it diligently, and I really think it'll contribute something new to the conversations we're having.
That's really exciting. And that's a really interesting topic in terms of the aftermath. And it makes me wonder, do you feel it affects everyone differently based on their own belief systems? Or do you feel like do you look at all the stories and cases you've investigated in terms of the aftermath and how people feel? Do you feel there's any correlation to those in terms of they experience similar feelings? Or do you just feel like it just kind of just changes their outlook on the world?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely patterns, and a lot of it has to do with language and how someone interprets the experience. So I definitely found patterns within like the actual words people use to describe what they experienced, you know, and then it just opened up from there. So yeah, I did find patterns, but I think what was more exciting was the broadness of it all and the weirdness of it all. A lot of these people couldn't really describe what they experienced in very simple terms of it was an alien who abducted me, or it was an angel and it was a miraculous experience. It really depends on the lens in which you look at the experience.
Yeah.
And for every person in the book, it was different. And I thought that was amazing. Yeah. I think I set out to find patterns and I came out on the other side being like, you can't, you can't. And we are creatures of habit and pattern, and we look for those.
Yeah.
And the more I dug, the more I realized that's not what we're dealing with. I don't think we're meant to truly find a pattern with all of this. I think it's a singular experience for the person having it, and it's how they either embrace it or deny it that ultimately will affect them and humanity overall. So that's kind of where I'm at, man. I feel like more and more people are feeling comfortable coming forward with these things and normalizing these topics.
Mm.
And the more people that come forward, the more it becomes okay to talk about it. And then we can start having those bigger conversations of, is it alien? Is it interdimensional beings?
Or, yeah.
Really, really dealing with. So,
yeah.
Yeah. I can't pretend that I'm going to find answers, but I'm going to keep trying.
Absolutely. And that's why the work you do is so important, because there are so many areas in this whole phenomena which needs to be investigated, you know, in terms of, you know, that phrase gumshoe detectives. You know, we need a lot of gumshoe detectives doing different things. And part of my research is actually understanding how our culture interprets this and how it delivers this. And I feel in many ways, and this often happens, I guess, with many people who experience things that because there is no data to support their experiences, they often get dismissed as, well, you know, you might have been confused, or, you know, how many pills have you popped lately, or whatever. You know, there's always kind of, you know, unless there's data, it's obviously really hard to be objective. But and you might be able to speak to this too, but people who have experiences, you know, who really believe in those experiences, I guess you might believe in something but never actually had an experience of it. And that can be a little bit different to something you have had an experience of, which may cause you to think differently. Like this actually happened yesterday. This is like so weird. I had to get my hair cut, and I was rushing to the hairdressers, and I just pulled into a, it was like parallel parking. There was like a building. It was like a, like an industrial kind of building there. And I just like pulled in, and I went and had my hair cut, and that was all fine. And then when I came back, I sat in the car, and there was this building, and there was a hedge. It was about 5 feet tall hedge. Mm-hmm. Anyway, there was a big section cut out of the hedge. It was like a meter and a half, and graffitied on the wall right in front of me. I was just sitting there looking at it. I just sat there and I like looked straight ahead, was UFO graffiti.
Oh, no way.
I was like, wow. Okay. I thought, like, I wasn't looking, like, it was so weird. Cause I came home and I told my kids and my wife, and I said, I don't know what it means. It's just one of those things. It's just there, you know. And it's like, I know anyone could have seen that, but it was just weird that when I sat in that car, it was like, it's like
that is the world giving you a message, man, or the phenomena. I truly believe that. And again, it's what you choose to do with the power you gave that experience.
Yeah,
and that's kind of where I think all of this really lies. It's how you both interpret the experience and how you decide to integrate it into your life.
Yeah.
And again, for those kids in Zimbabwe and Westall, some of them really just, you know, leaned into it and really embraced it, and it helped them. And some, look, they denied it. They became really depressed, or some were driven to alcoholism. Like, it really is up to you how much power you give something like that.
Yeah.
And I think that's awesome. I think that was a sign. But it could just be complete happenstance, you know.
Absolutely. No, I felt it was a sign. That's why I felt compelled to tell you, because
I love that. Thank you for sharing.
I don't know about you, but, you know, I have to take breaks from UFO Twitter every now and again. I have to admit. Yeah. I just feel like it's too much information. I feel like unless I can separate it, my brain needs to process things, and, you know, and sometimes it can't process stuff. So it's weird, because I have these moments where it's like, no, I need to step back, and then I'm back into it, and I need to step back. Anyway, I felt like that, and that's the thing. Like, I'm not going to, you know, necessarily go back there and look at the wall again. But it's just, I think it was the universe or whatever sending me a really strong message. It's like, hey, dude, we know you're struggling, but here you go. Here's a message. You know, you need to see this. You know, don't give up. Keep going. Like, it's just, you know, that's what I took. I think it would not serve me to deny it or kind of go, oh, that was a coincidence, and then just move on from it. Like, I personally, I won't read into it too much, but I do definitely feel like it was some kind of a hint.
I have no doubt. A hint, a nudge, whatever you want to call it. Yeah. I think these phenomena are so teasing and tricksterish that they are that weird for a reason, and they do whatever the hell they want. It goes back to exactly what we were saying. They don't care who the United States president is, or you know, the prime minister of this country, this, that. It doesn't matter. Yeah. Like, this could all be a game to them, and it could be all for fun. And hey, if we're even being invited into that game, I think that's awesome, because I was always picked last in gym class, man. At least I got picked. That's the way I look at it. And I got picked for ufology. So yeah. that's it for me.
I know. It is. It is. It's a very exciting game. It's a fun game, and it's always changing. But it is. It's also fun. And it's also, it's good not to take it too seriously sometimes, even though Absolutely. A lot of serious stuff is going on. You do need to kind of, you know, put it all in perspective and whatnot. But yeah.
Agreed.
No, good stuff. Good stuff. Look, I think we'll wrap it up there. It's been amazing, amazing to meet you in person. I know we've been sort of emailing, and I've been following Somewhere in the Skies for a really long time, and it's a fantastic show. And thank you so much for the contribution you make to ufology, and I think to presenting the stories. And presenting all the information that you do to the community, hopefully that stuff is getting out to a much broader community. Hopefully it keeps continuing to do that. But thank you so much, Ryan. I really appreciate your time today in talking to me. And yeah, we'll catch up again soon.
Absolutely, my pleasure, my honor, Brett. Keep doing what you're doing, man. We need you. Nah. We need you in this game, in this fight, and I have no doubt you're gonna shoot to the top, man. So thank you. It's been a true honor.
Good stuff. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Success probe 20, Angels 5. Expected approach time 3-4, approach button 17. The altimeter 2997.
9997.
Marshall Victor
211
sweeping signal.
211 Marshall Case 3 recovery. 211 Marshall 060 for 22 Angel 7. Your expected approach time 36 approach button 17. Altimeter 2997 in Sayre State.
9997 8.0.
Forward Hayes. Bird altimeter 2992. Dingo fuels F-14 3.9er, Alpha 7 2.2, Echo Alpha 6 4.1, Alpha 6 3.5, Sierra 3 2.3, Echo 2 2.5.